You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. Come in for their best deals ever right now. Record number of customers that take advantage of the Chevrolet 0% interest through the summer, so you might as well do it. They have 20% off MRSP on remaining 2017s at Lakewood Chev. Jeff Woods joins us. Woods, how are you?
Good, Jason.
All right. Now, I don't really want to discuss this because people are going to yell and scream, so I'm blaming you because it was your idea, because there's no white stuff on the ground. But there is a lot in the mountains, and I know a lot of the diehards have already wheeled up to the mountains to go skiing. And there is a pretty high risk of injury a lot of times, and not from running into trees, because a lot of people just, you're not prepared, and then suddenly you get on the hill, and like most of us, if you're stupid like me, suddenly you think you can do more than you can.
Mm-hmm. The skiing, you mean? Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the problem with, I think, all of us. I mean, as weekend warriors, we're all kind of, we think we're better than we are, regardless of what activity or sport we want to participate in. But interesting with skiing, Greger, or downhill skiing or snowboarding or even cross-country skiing, there's some consistency with some of the injuries in this sport. And it seems that the beginners are at the highest risk. And that's the case because they're not very efficient. They fatigue quickly. So with downhill skiing, for example, it's typically the knee, or even in cross-country skiing, it could be the knee or the hip that tends to get injured. And with snowboarding, it seems to be the wrist. So there's a lot of wrist breaks, because when a snowboarder falls over, especially a rookie, They put their hands down to try and break their fall, and they end up breaking their wrist. The other thing, spiral fractures are very common in snowboarding and skiing. And that happens because of shear force. And shear force is like an opposing force. So let's say, for example, you get your ski or your snowboard locked in a rut, and then your body is kind of rotating in the opposite direction, and you've got this sort of spiral effect, and your leg can break. And oddly, when I was snowboarding some years back, this happened to me. That was exactly the case. I got my snowboard stuck in a rut. I wasn't even going that fast, and I had a spiral fracture in my tip fib area, my lower leg, and this multi-directional force, and it was the most painful thing I have ever had, and I was kind of off my feet for many weeks as a result of that spiral fracture. So it wasn't my greatest moment, Greger, by any means.
Spiral fracture, that's not good. So what's your best advice then to get, quote, ski, quote, ready?
Okay, well, first, and I talk about this a lot. Like with any activity, I always talk about a basic strength program. And skiing, cross-country skiing or downhill skiing, snowboarding, no different. You want to make sure that you start with a basic strength program that works your whole body and has probably a lower body focus, obviously. And after you've kind of built base strength for a few weeks, the focus should shift to moving your weight loads a little bit faster, incorporating maybe some jump training to make skiers more reactive to the variation changes in the terrain. So this improves like neuromuscular reaction. It facilitates quick changes of direction when you have to do that. So that's why the jump training, or the plyometric training we call it, is really important to do after your base strength training. And skiers need to start training now, because you need like some time for adaptation, Greger. So you're going to need about 6 to 8 weeks of strength training, taking the faster bar speeds and the jump training into account, and doing this probably 3 times per week in order to be ready for ski season. And if you do that, you're going to end up being able to expect some improvements in your ski performance. And you can also expect to probably reduce or diminish your risk of injury. The other thing I'd say to most of our skiers, too, there's a few other things to be aware of, so you can improve your performance. Be aware of the environmental factors that affect how your body responds up in the cold. So altitude, for example, will have an effect.
At altitude, we fatigue faster because the air is a little bit thinner. Your perceived exertion of all the activities up in the mountains will be higher. And there's always a chance of what we call acute mountain sickness. So if you can get up to the mountains a few days before and sort of acclimatize to the variance in altitude, that will make a difference in terms of your performance. And the cold temperature in general reduces power output for your muscles because they fatigue faster. They don't generate force as easily. So again, my advice, again, over the strength training part of it and sort of prepping yourself weeks in advance, have a plan when you go up to the mountains. Maybe you're just going to ski for half days, like your first few trips up, so that you can recover a little bit faster and your secondary day of skiing will be a little bit better as a result. And most ski injuries happen, Gregor, when people, you know, are fatigued. And how many times do we hear it from people? Oh, you know, like I ended up getting hurt or having a wipeout, you know, my last run of the day type thing. And it's the truth. So ski or snowboard strength training should happen, if you can do it, all year round. And again, just focus on those big multi-joint movements, lots of squats and things that focus on the lower body are probably going to serve you pretty well.
Yeah, now let's be honest, that's not realistic. So people aren't going to do that all year round, maybe 5%. But a lot of people are kind of weekend skiers. They get out, like to have fun. So how can they avoid that inevitable stiffness that occurs when suddenly we get out on the run, we're feeling great, and then you get home or Sunday, you're like, oh my God, I can't move.
Well, I guess, you know, the thing to take into account there is your warm-up. And again, science kind of dictates that a more thorough warm-up over anything else, because nothing you can do after the fact, like after your activity, has very little bearing on how sore your muscles are. So our warm-up before we hit the ski hill is going to make the biggest difference. So a dynamic calisthenic warm-up of some sort is going to be good over, like, static stretching, for example. So all the things you saw, you know, Jack LaLanne doing, like push-ups, jumping jacks, walking lunges, for example, are really important. And if you can get on a stationary bike or something like that and ride for 15 to 20 minutes in the hotel before you hit the hill, really cool idea. I know people are thinking right now, Woods, you're nuts. Like, no one's going to do that. But I'm telling you, folks, if you can find the time to be active a little bit for half an hour before you hit the hill, it makes a difference. And if people go online, Gregor, Google the Alpine Canadian Ski Team warm-up video. It's fantastic. It shows these guys and girls in the parking lot doing all these really cool dynamic movements and light jogging and so on. And that's how they warm up and prepare before they do their training runs on the hill. So if we can get the average individual to kind of engage in this type of activity, it makes a huge difference to their performance before they get on the hill. And it will help in terms of prepping your body and reducing your risk of any or injury. The other thing I'd say too, Gregor, just in closing on this, if you want to get your biggest bang for your buck when you're up there for a nice little ski holiday for the weekend, don't underestimate the value of good quality sleep, and like eat well when you're up there, and pack some food that you can sort of eat on the hill as well when you take a little bit of a break. And I know people like to go up to the mountains and have a couple of drinks, but if you can reduce your alcohol consumption, you would be so much better served, because the alcohol sort of inhibits your performance. It contributes to a fatigue factor. And again, that euphoria associated with thinking that we're better than we are, it's even greater when we have a couple of drinks. So when you're up there, maybe a little less alcohol might help.
Woods, good stuff, buddy. Have yourself a great week. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
All right, good, Gregor.